This upcoming concert season will be all about the boots, and Tecovas is your stop for the best in Western style. Tecovas has seasonal and limited edition offerings this spring and summer, including men's and women's boots, apparel, hats, bags, and more. All Tecovas boots are made by hand in a time-honored tradition with timeless styles that are always on trend. And Tecovas has first wear comfort with little to no break-in period. It's hard to find this level of comfort paired with this level of style. Stop by your local Tecovas store, have a complimentary drink or two, that's WCB style, and shop new styles. The smell of fresh leather and friendly staff are at your service. Many stores even have leather custom branding to make your boots truly personalized. And with regular live music and events, there's no in-store experience like it. If you can't make it into a store, just visit tecovas.com. That's T-E-C-O-V-A-S.com. They offer free shipping on all boots, as well as free returns and exchanges, and ship right to your door. Go to tecovas.com and find your new favorite pair of boots today.
Fishing like a local isn't just about catching fish. It's about connecting with the environment and the people who call it home. It's about hearing the stories and traditions that have been passed down for generations and sharing unforgettable moments with the people you meet along the way. Fishing like a local is having an experience that stays with you forever. And with Fishing Booker, you can experience it too, no matter where you are. Discover your next adventure on Fishing Booker.
Welcome to the Casting Across Fly Fishing Podcast. I'm Matthew of castingacross.com, where I explore the quarry and culture of fly fishing. Today we're talking about fly fishing trips and how to get there and how to get a little bit more out of them. So we all have that prototypical fly fishing adventure in our mind where we are going somewhere exotic, somewhere where there's lots of fish, lots of big fish, and we stay in the lodge and we stay right on the water. We're able to wake up and walk right out and get our feet in the river. We're able to go over the fly shop and get exactly what we need. And at evening, we're able to sit around the fire and listen to the loons and enjoy the company of other anglers. Or you might have the idea of being in the middle of nowhere, being around no one. And both of those things are equally acceptable ideals when it comes to a fly fishing trip. But they both require something. They require money. They require effort. They require energy. And that's good. I mean, anything worth having ought to require a little bit of something. But there are ways to get a lot of those benefits and save a little bit of money. Because the fact of the matter is, for most of us, it's going to be a little bit of a sacrifice to get out for a few days or a few nights to get somewhere where we are on the kind of water that ticks a lot of those boxes that we are looking to see in our fly fishing trips. So today what I want to talk about is a few ways that I've found that you can get a whole lot of bang for your buck and not compromise. Now, I am not denigrating one bit staying at that fly fishing lodge right on the water, having all those amenities where they make you your packed lunch. And the fly shop being on site is really nice. But if you wanted to do a couple different things, or if you wanted to prioritize something over another, there are definitely some options that you can take. I mean, for example, I would prioritize staying somewhere less ideal and getting a guide. I'd rather spend that, $700 on a day in a drift boat than having a really nice room that I'm not going to spend a lot of time in. Now, that's just kind of a common sense thing, but it isn't necessarily something that if you're a new angler that you might think about. You might watch the fly fishing shows or the fly fishing things on YouTube, and you might read the magazines, and you might even read the guidebooks, and you see the whole package, and you get online, and you start adding things up, and that Riverside Lodge where the guide works out of, all of a sudden your trip is thousands of dollars for something that's maybe only a state or a couple states away. Well, you can get rid of the lodge and still use the guide, and you've saved yourself about 50% of that cost. If you can afford it, great. But if not, that's one simple way that you can kind of cut down on the expenses. But that's the kind of thing that we're talking about today, but a couple other concrete examples that are worth sharing. And the first one is actually going to have a very practical impact on your fly fishing, and that is choose better days to go. choose better days to go. Now, this is true of a lot of things. I think you're probably well aware of the fact that there are better days to fly than others. There are calendars, there are apps, even on the travel aggregator websites, it shows you the best days to fly. Same is true for booking hotels. The same is true for so many other kind of travel luxury activities. Not only is that true for when and where you stay for fly fishing trips, but the fish are going to notice that also. And it might not be necessarily for the fish's sake, but it could be for your benefit. How many drift boats are there on the water on a Saturday compared to how many drift boats are there on the water on a Tuesday? Two very different situations. And I know for me that there is a significant mental aspect to this. I know that on a river that is filled with fish, a bunch of drift boats aren't necessarily going to reduce or limit my chances because there's plenty of fish that I'm going to get to if I'm waiting, or if I'm in a boat, then people are going to get to if they are waiting or they're in a boat. It's just a law of averages, if you will. But in my head, I don't want to see a bunch of drift boats floating by me as I am trying to spend a well-earned vacation day and trip out on the water. So one way to limit that is, as I said before, pick better days. It might be easier to get away on a Saturday and a Sunday. But honestly, I would compromise my vacation days and maybe even what I have to do for workload by trying to get away like Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. I think one of the best times to leave, and actually a trip I'm planning right now, leaving Sunday afternoon, waking up first thing Monday, fishing all day Monday, all day Tuesday, a little bit of Wednesday, and then coming home, as opposed to the end of the week. Now, not everyone has that sort of work flexibility or that luxury, but if it came to taking off a Monday and then working on a Saturday because you get a better time in fishing, that's something that's definitely worth considering. So not only are the fish going to potentially respond better, if you are a little neurotic about your fishing, you're going to be in a better frame of mind, like me. And then also, there's a good chance that you are going to at least get a little bit more availability and maybe even a little bit of a break on the cost. Hoteliers, is that how you say it? Hoteliers? Hotel runners? People who own Airbnbs? I don't know. They want to fill up those weekdays. They have no problem in those prime spots finding people to be there on Friday night and Saturday night. But getting there Monday night and Tuesday night, that is the way to go. So I would say that is the first and foremost thing. I guess you could say that that's the first and foremost thing. The second thing is to consider, if you really want to have a bang up experience, prioritize the guide as opposed to the accommodations. So that would be the first two things. The third thing that I think is worth mentioning that I have truly enjoyed and benefited from is finding a place that is not on the water, at least not on the water that you want to fish. So I had a wonderful time fly fishing up in northern New Hampshire, right on the Canadian border, a number of years ago. And the rivers that we wanted to fish, they were in a pretty remote location, very difficult terrain. So the accommodations that were right on the water were few and far between. And so the cost was just astronomical. And so would it have been nice, again, to wake up, walk out, and fish? Absolutely. However, that was just not in the cards. There's plenty of other things that we wanted to do and better ways that we could spend our money. But what we found was a cabin that was on a pond. So were we catching giant landlocked salmon? Were we catching big, strong rainbows? No, but what were we catching? We were catching fun, eager, willing to play brook trout. And that's what we did first thing in the morning. That's what we did, after dinner, was go and catch a couple of these brook trout on this pond. The bulk of our day was spent on the big rivers, but by getting further away, we were able to save a lot of money and we were still on fish. Another experience in Maine, exact same thing. The river was probably about a half mile away, but we were on a warm water lake. And so after a day of like raking our brains and really doing our darndest and some very technical trout fishing, a lot of nymphing that required a lot of focus. We were able to turn around as you know we were getting sleepy and getting ready for bed, going out and throwing poppers for smallmouth bass, and it was a blast. We still got that aesthetic of being on the water, but we were able to save a few bucks in doing so. And again, you know, the thing to remember is how much time you're going to be spending in the cabin. Now, if you are in a real backcountry location, obviously you're going to want to be on the water, and if not on the water, very, very close to the water. But if you're someplace where your truck, your car is right there, right next to you, and you can hop, you're going to have to hop in regardless. I mean, that another aside here. You know, one of the things that I have found for most places where I've fished all across the country is that, yes, there's a lot of joy in walking out and fishing and fishing that water. But whether it's because of conditions or whether it's just because of getting bored or whether it's because of really wanting to try something else, you're going to move around a little bit anyway. I can't think of any one place where I have stayed and I've fished, you know, just the mile upstream and downstream of that place. Almost everywhere I've gone, I've said, you know what, I want to optimize my fishing time. And so I want to fish three, four spots in this watershed. So this is going to be my base of operations, and then I'm going to bounce around. So if that is your mentality, which is totally fine. At the same time, if you are a homebody and you want to sit and stay and you don't want to see another road, another person for, you know, 3 days, then that's great too. But if you do have this idea of using your hotel as a, or your room as a base of operations, then it doesn't really matter that much if it's on the water. And so that's a third thing to think about. So first thing, days. Which days are best, are going to give you the best bang for your buck and the best opportunity in front of fresh fish by yourself. Secondly, prioritize those amenities that matter, particularly in that fly fishing kind of circle. So guide over room, fly shop over being on the water, whatever it may be, right? And then thirdly, try to find something that's on water, but maybe not on the water that you were looking to fish, right? Fourth, and this one is the one that I think is probably the most common sense, but is definitely worth repeating, because I know every once in a while I find myself like forgetting this and then having to circle back around and start my search all over again. Depending on where you are, you are going to get a much more comfortable, much more easy, and much more economical angling, lodging situation if you just go to the chain hotels. Now, are you going to necessarily be able to leave your rod rigged up on the front porch and have your waders dangling over the railing and all that sort of stuff? Maybe. I've seen that. There's been places where I've been, you know, fishing and driving up and down the highway, and you see, like on a Holiday Inn where there's an external entrance to the rooms, you know, someone's got their waders dangling over the side. So, I mean, it's not the worst thing in the world. Actually, recently down in Florida, I did that exact thing where I was kind of at the end of this this nice hotel, and I just didn't want to break down my rod every time I went in and out of the room. I didn't feel like getting my rod tip broken in the door. It was safe. It was quiet. So I just left it out there. So it's not that it's, you can't do that. But again, if you are going to be using your car and going from place to place, then, you know, you can leave that stuff in your vehicle. And as long, again, some people are pretty persnickety about how secure their stuff is. If you take the proper precautions and you're not in a super sketchy part of town, then you can leave your stuff rigged up in your car and, you know, go to the Holiday Inn, go to whatever, you know, Marriott has in that area, whatever it might be. And you can stay in those places. And if you know what, if you're a little bit wild and you don't mind rolling the dice on how clean the sheets are, I mean, find those little mom and pop hotels that are around. And you can really get some good deals. Where I was looking recently on some pretty big trout rivers here on the East Coast, you get a little bit away from the river and you are cutting that price into a quarter. So, you know, $75 to $125 a night for, you know, maybe 15 minutes from the river. as opposed to $250 to $300 a night. It's a pretty big swing and a pretty big difference. And if you are on a shoestring budget, then that is absolutely the way to go. And once again, as I've said a number of times, if all you're doing in that hotel room is sleeping, then as long as it's clean and as long as, you know, the water's hot for the shower, as long as there's coffee in close proximity, then by all means, go for it. Try to get a better deal if possible. And there's been times where I've stayed in, you know, quote unquote fly fishing accommodations, and they really are playing to their crowd and preying on your aesthetic emotions because you think, my goodness, what in the world am I doing here? I could have gone to the, you know, the Motel 6 and gotten a much better experience. So that is the fourth thing. The next thing, and I'm just in the process of doing this right now, kind of go off books. There are a number of places that don't necessarily pop up on search engines. This is a conversation that I've had quite a few times on the podcast, on the website lately, as I've been aggregating all the fly shops in the country, as many as I can find. We're up to almost 400, and I just got a handful this week that I'm still sorting through from recommendations from folks. But there are plenty of kinds of accommodations that are only kind of given out still by word of mouth. They're just not search engine optimized, as it were. You really can't Google, you know, places to stay and list a town, and this is going to pop up. Just this last couple of months, I had two fly fishing guides say, hey, there's this place the guy next to me rents out. It's a really good deal. You should consider it or tell people about it. And I get online to go find it, and I can't find it. I got to call up the guy that told me about it. And he's like, oh yeah, here's the guy's phone number. Okay, that's great. And that's a nice little like hidden gem. But how would you find out about that unless you talk to people? And really, that's the solution. You got to talk to people. Find a local guide. Say, hey, do you know anyone in the area? Talk to a local fly shop. That's probably your best bet, because if you talk to a guide and that guide works out of a shop, or excuse me, out of a lodge, then that's a little bit, you know, not sketchy, but you know what I mean. It's maybe a little bit off to say, hey, I know I could stay at your employer's place for $300 a night, but is there anything cheaper? And they might be cool with that. But talk to a fly shop. They're going to be the ones that have that knowledge. They're going to say, oh yeah, there's so-and-so who has a loft above his barn. There's this person that has a little cabin that the kit that they put together. Here's their number. Here's their email. Here's how you get a hold of them. That is an excellent way to find things that are under the radar that are going to exceed your experience a lot of times at going through a big vacation aggregator or some sort of a search engine. So that is definitely worth considering. I think we're up to five. My goodness. Okay, so let's see. Six. Six is don't rule out camping. I am, you know, it's funny. I would say 10 years ago, I would say I'm going to camp until I die. Now I'm like, man, a couple extra bucks and I don't mind staying in a hotel. Just the ease, the convenience, and honestly, the prices of things, the price of the bottom has gone up and the price of the middle has stayed the same. So you see that in like, I don't go frequent like Chili's a whole lot, but when I do have meetings there, the prices at Chili's are the same thing essentially as they were from like 5 to 10 years ago, as far as I can tell. But you go to McDonald's and that price is like doubled. And the same, I would say the same thing is true. You can get into an economy hotel or a mid-range hotel for like a reasonable amount of money. But some of the prices for camping, maybe outside of the state parks and the national parks, but some like the private campgrounds have just skyrocketed to the point where, you know, I sleep in my car as opposed to camp in places like that. But that is a true cost-saving measure if you are up for it. And if there's a place where you can really spread out and it's comfortable and it's right on the river, then a little bit of a lack of comfort may be offset by the proximity to the fishing that you're going to enjoy. A lot of this is about trade-off. And again, ultimately, that's really what it is all about. If you, you know, if you're concerned about finances, where can I make cuts? And so if you would prefer to sleep somewhere where there is running water and where there is a mattress, then that is your priority. But if you'd prefer to be on the water and you're okay with being a little bit grimy because you're going to be fishing all day anyway, and it maybe is only for one night or two nights, then sleep in your car, sleep in a campsite. That's a great way to get close to the water, on the water, in a lot easier and more economical way. I did that recently. That was just last summer, actually, down in Pennsylvania. And, you know, I just didn't feel bad about spending a little bit more money for breakfast and for lunch and for dinner and for buying some flies and for doing some other stuff because I spent $0 and 0 cents at hotels. And it was the nice weather too. So I wasn't super hot at night and, you know, didn't get all stinky and nasty. So I think that brings us up to six things that are worth considering when you are planning your trip and you want to maybe save a few dollars. So in review, they are pick better days. You're going to get better deals and probably better fishing if you pick better days. Secondly, forego that fancy accommodation and get a guide. If that is truly something that you want to do, and I've talked about, you know, ideas and ways to think about getting guides in other podcasts. So that's something to look back in the archives of the podcast on Casting Across and ways to kind of optimize getting a guide. I think that's kind of a splurge worthy activity, especially if you are fishing somewhere that you are going to fish again and you have the means is getting a guide. If it's somewhere that you fish for the first time or you just haven't been able to figure out. Third, fish or find a place to stay on other water. So you're not able to stay on the big river, well, stay on the small river. You're not able to stay on the river, well, stay in a pond. You know, you're not going to wake up to the big trout, but you might wake up to the happy bluegill, and that's worthwhile. Fourthly, don't overlook the chains. There's some awesome options with the big hotel brands that are in close proximity to water, especially if the hotel is truly just going to be your base of operations. Fifth, look at the word of mouth opportunities that may be available to you. Call up the fly shop and say, hey, do you know anyone who has someplace to stay? And something that's worth mentioning with that is that, you know, they may try to push you through Airbnb, but if you can say, hey, I can pay you right now with Venmo, then you might be able to save a couple of bucks doing things that way. And then sixth, that's probably the better way to say it. Don't pass on camping. If you have a spry back or a large SUV and you have the right gear, then don't overlook that because that could very well be the way to truly optimize your time on the water. There's a lot more, inevitably, that we could talk about, other ideas, other options, and they're all good. And I'm sure in one way, shape, or form, I've mentioned other things throughout the history of Casting Across. So definitely go back in the website and check things out, castingacross.com, put in camping, put in fly fishing trips in the search bar, and I'm sure you'll be able to find something. But if there's something that you think is grossly overlooked, don't hesitate to let me know. Matthew@castingacross.com. This week, two articles. So if you usually tune out, listen to these two. The first one is Catching Virtually Inaccessible Fish. Catching Virtually Inaccessible Fish. Now, I don't think I communicated this super well in the article, but this is really like a mental game where if you see a spot that it looks almost impossible to get a fly into, stop, take a breath. There's a very good chance that if it's almost impossible to get a fly into, there's a fish there and it's a fish that's worth trying to catch. Okay. This happened recently where I had two spots back to back in the article. I only talked about one. One, I kind of blew through it and I messed it up, spooked the fish. The second one, I stopped, took my time, figured things out, did the trigonometry, made the cast, caught the fish. So it's a little bit of a mental technique rather than an angling technique, a presentation technique. All of those things factor in, but it's really more about your approach. So that's an article that's worth looking into. It's like, I think three or four very practical things to think about as you look at these spots and you find these spots. The next article is really cool. It's called Earth Day Books from My Other Library. So as I talk about from now and again on the podcast, vocationally, I am a pastor. So I talk about that is the real life and the fly fishing thing is what I do to fill the margin times. Well, I review a lot of books, a lot of fly fishing books on the website, and I really enjoy it. I always have one kind of going on the side, but usually have for every one fly fishing book I read, I probably read like seven or eight other books. And so this week, in honor of, that's a little bit exaggerated, but in observation in proximity, how about that, of Earth Day, I recommend four fly fishing books from my theological library. So here's the disclaimer or the commentary on that, right? If you are a Christian, these are some good resources to about thinking through ecology and environmentalism through a biblical worldview lens. If you are skeptical, or if you think that there is only one way that Christians think about the environment, and maybe that is they don't really care about it, they're waiting for their cloud and their harp and their halo, these would also be some good resources that maybe better articulate a more robust and consistent way to look at the environment and seeing creation stewardship as an important priority. This week's recommendation is another book. It is this week, Spring Creek Strategies, Hatches, Patterns, and Techniques by Mike Heck. I am a sucker for all things East Coast fly fishing, particularly Pennsylvania Spring Creek fly fishing. And Mike Heck is a guide and an author out of South Central Pennsylvania. And he fishes on Falling Springs Creek quite a bit. And that's where the bulk of my interaction with him over the years had been. And this is a great book because it really is Eastern focused. There's a couple of great Spring Creek books that are out there that I really enjoy, but they are, you know, they show these pictures in these big sprawling creeks and how they flow into these large Western rivers. Well, that's not my idea of a Spring Creek. I mean, it's real, it's legitimate, but my experience of Spring Creeks is these small, tight, weed-choked little streams that flow through farmlands and through the woods and through towns. And so if you live on the East Coast, particularly if you live in the Mid-Atlantic, but at the same time, if you live anywhere where there's Spring Creeks, I mean, I've fished Spring Creeks in Missouri, you know, I've fished Spring Creeks in Colorado, then this is an excellent book, beautiful photography, and just very, very practical, down-to-earth approach. So I'll put a link to Spring Creek Strategies by Mike Heck on this podcast show notes over at castingacross.com. Thanks for listening to the Casting Across Fly Fishing Podcast. Please subscribe in your favorite podcast app and rate the podcast on iTunes. Then head over to castingacross.com for 3 posts a week on the people, places, and things that go into the pursuit of fish.